Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Overthrows podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. We've got a few people in the comments already. AJ is here, Samrat Prabhu Desai, Cobloaf Records, and Sheratan KD, as always. And we've got Soham Chatterjee as well, who is sick. So get well soon, Soham. And this podcast is on the GABA test. We'll be reviewing that and also talking about a shock retirement. Ravichandran Ashwin has decided to hang up his boots mid-series from international cricket, Jared. And I mean, an absolute legend of the game. A bona fide test legend, that's for sure. And I mean, clearly he was communicated to that he wasn't in India's plans for the SCG, right? Because if he was, then he would have stuck around a bit. And I mean, I'm a bit baffled by that because I would have played him there.
Spinners averaged 52 at the SCG in the last 4 years. Are you sure you would have played him?
Well, that's also fair.
I mean, you would have played him on the old SCG, maybe even the one that India went to last time, but it's a very different wicket now. Look, I think when it comes down to it, they probably did the sensible thing. I think the grown-up conversation was, we're going to use you in Adelaide. We don't think you're going to play in any other games. And then he had to make a decision for himself. Do you want to wait around? Because he's not going to play much in England. And he was probably told that, but he probably would have worked that out, one out for himself. Do you want to wait around until the next home summer? Or, you know, we're happy to keep you around. We want you to be our backup spinner and we want to use you at home. But obviously you're in the situation. It feels like from the outside at the moment, and we might get more information, but it feels like from the outside at the moment, he made a grown-up decision. Indian cricket made a good decision. And, you know, the only thing, we've talked about this before, of you don't let your really, really talented players just disappear. It would have been great if he wanted to be in a situation to hang around and then come back when needed. But, you know, if that's, you know, not the way that they look at these things. You know, and it's also, it's very easy for me to say that about Jimmy Anderson or Ashwin, but these are extraordinary players, right? And when you say to them later in their career, do you want to come off the bench, right? You can see why that would upset them. But if he wanted to keep playing test cricket, that's the best way that he could have done it. And he would have been useful to India for at least another 18 months, I would have thought.
The next time,
if they get a series of injuries, he would have been he would have been useful.
Exactly. That could still happen, right? So that's another aspect to this. But, you know, the next time India is slated in to play home tests, Ashwin will be around 39. So maybe, you know, he seems to me like the sort of dude who would never want to overstay his welcome. And, like, he just made a clear-cut decision over here. And it's a Dhoni-esque.
It's a long time to wait, too, at that age. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, if you're 26 and you're in your prime and you're just like, look, there's no test for you in this matter. It's like, great, well, I'll go back and I'll smash domestic cricket and then I'll come back. If you're 39, you're just like, so I have to keep myself fit for another 8, 9 months, 10 months, and then I play again. Like, if that's me, I'm thinking to myself, how much do I really want to stick around? And there's no reason why he couldn't have done that. I think they would have still picked him when he was available for some of those games. But the truth is that they've got a ridiculous stock of spinners available, one of which is a tall off spinner like him, who's a better bat. They've got Jadeja, of course. They've got Akshar Patel as Jadeja's backup. They've got Kuldeep Yadav. You can understand why at the age of 38, he was probably, and I, you know, I'm not like Ashwin's friend or anything. We don't chat. But, like, I'd heard rumors that he was thinking about,
the end, right? Rohit said when he got to Perth, he had heard those rumors and spoken to Ashwin about it. And I'm sure the communication was there. It's a very Dhoni-esque sort of retirement mid-series in Australia, that as well. But, you know, from the perspective of a fan and follower of the sport, I would have liked to see him get a send-off and a farewell test, but he clearly doesn't care about that. So we respect his decision. But anyway, just to go through his numbers real quick over here, I know you've done an entire video, which you guys should go out and check, but 106 test matches, which could have been a lot more if I'm being real, 537 wickets at 24, 37 fifers, Jared, second most tied with Warney, and 8 tenfers, which is fifth most level with Kumble. He also, you know, averages 28 with in England with the ball and 42 in Australia, where he kept getting better with age. And to top that off, you know, 3,503 runs at 25.75, where he scored 6 tons and 14 50s in 151 innings. So after every 7.5 innings, Ashwin is going to score a 50-plus score, which is immense, right? And I think what sets him apart over here, really, in the midst of all of these things that I've said. Also, by the way, he's got right-handed batters out 269 times and left-handed batters out 268 times. So he's not just a destroyer of left-handed batters, but it's intelligence and wit.
Say that, but yeah. I wish he would have played one more game and got the numbers above.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's a proper nerd whose intelligence and wit sets him apart, and he's left a killer legacy, one of the best players to have ever played cricket. And I know that you have differing opinions on this, but to me, he is the greatest Indian spinner of all time and probably the best after Warren and Murali.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I have differing opinions. There's just not much between him purely as a spinner, him and Kumble.
Yeah.
By the way, sorry, Pranav has also said, surprised you all didn't reference Swan's retirement. Pretty similar. It's not similar at all. Swan didn't want to go on that tour. He told England he was done. They kind of said, no, come out anyway. And then his arm just completely gave way while he was out there. So it's very, very dissimilar. They were desperate to have him in the side and he couldn't do the job. Whereas with Ashwin, there's other players around. So it's very, the only thing that's similar is it happened in Australia and it happened mid-series. Everything else is very different. Yeah, look, I don't think there's much between him and Kumble. I've probably done as much research on this as anyone else ever has.
I mean, I think this is the most talked about topic in our Good Areas chat, right? We've gone off on this and there's the entire Kumble bowled on flat decks, whereas Ashwin bowled on helpful surfaces debate. That's where you kind of just pick your poison. But I still feel if Ashwin got flat decks, he would still be pretty damn good.
Kumble would have been pretty good on spinning decks too, though.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, it's those mild changes in his, what do you call it? Those tweaks in his angle, the carom ball, all the variations, the variations in pace. He was such an intelligent cricketer, probably one of the best cricketing brains we've ever had, right?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I think he's a better cricketer than Kumble.
Of course,
the batting. Test cricketer, certainly. Yeah, because of the batting, but also because of the tactics. So you're talking about the bowling tactics, but I think he's worth a lot out on the field, someone who was thinking about things differently, who was suggesting things. Yeah, I see him as an all-rounder, but his all-rounderness is different to other players. Someone's just said that Kumble was heaps better. Kumble was not heaps better. For Kumble to be heaps better than Ashwin, he would have to be like Warren or Murali, right? Like even if you think Kumble was better, he wasn't heaps better. But no, there's definitely an element there of I think he would have done great in other eras. I actually think he would have been a much better. I think one thing that Kumble had as an advantage over Ashwin was he was the number one spinner, you know, mostly overseas. And so he developed his game in a way that Ashwin didn't. But there's nothing within Ashwin's game that tells us he wouldn't have been able to do that. You know, we saw the improvements as he was going, but he didn't develop the way that, you know, Nathan Lyon developed, right? Or the way that Jadeja has developed, because those guys are all pitch spinners, right? And Ashwin wasn't used that way. But even within that, he was brilliant in the West Indies. He was brilliant in South Africa. He was learning to be quite good in Australia. Like England's probably the only place where he didn't quite, where he did struggle overall when you're looking at the other spinners in the game, right? Yeah, when you look at match factor, he's really, really good everywhere else. But he was obviously one of the greatest spinners of all time. I would make a case purely on the spinners that Kumble is at least at the same level as him. But it's not an easy decision to pick between either of them for the third greatest spinner of all time.
Right. And I mean, Jared has a video on that as well where he contemplates this. And we have a footmarks on Ashwin, right? The Ashwins, which you guys should go and check out because we nerd out on all things that make him great. And plus, like, based on everything that we've seen from him on and off the field, he's been a thorough gentleman and he's been a great ambassador for Indian cricket and cricket overall. And I mean, I'm expecting a solid career in media as well because he's such a deep thinker of the sport. And I mean, he will go into those nitty-gritties and he absolutely relishes it. So I think like this is not the last of Ravichandran and Ashwin we've seen, you know, in cricket. He'll keep contributing in one way or another.
No, look, I think he's obviously quite clearly setting up a media career. Whether he likes it when he starts it is a different thing. I kind of hope that he invests more in his own products. I don't think he needs to go and work with other people. I think I'll put it this way. I think Ashwin could revolutionize cricket media.
Greater areas.
Yeah. And I wish he'd done more as a player. And I know it's hard because Indian players are so overtaxed when it comes to the hours that they have free in a day and everything else. But he has the ability to change how we talk about cricket. Right?
And he made the Munkit mainstream. That's also part of his legacy, right?
And that's what I mean. Like all of it, retired outs.
Exactly.
Right? Like, you know.
He's a forward thinker.
I just think that I know he has at times been frustrated by the way that cricket media has gone. No more than I have been, of course. The reason I exist in cricket media is because of how frustrated I was at cricket media, right? So I completely get that. But I can't change the conversation, right? Maybe in like 10 or 15 years' time I could. But at this stage, there's no way I could change the conversation. He can. Right? He can say, we need to talk about cricket. We need to stop talking about nonsense and we need to talk about cricket.
Well, I mean,
and
the difference...
The communication skills to do that as well.
The difference between you and him is 537 test wickets, right? But what do you think?
There's a lot of
Who's the bigger nerd, you or Ashwin?
I thought you were going to ask who the better spinner was and I would have had to really think about it. I think he'd struggle to out-nerd me, if I'm being honest, but... I think he's up there with players like Ish Sodhi. You know, Marnus is probably another one.
Murali.
Mike Hussey. Yeah. That are just absolutely obsessed with the game on a level that, you know, that most cricketers aren't. And it's worth saying that I don't want to slag off most cricketers because fans get really upset. At this, they're like, oh, he'd rather play golf, or he wish he was a footballer or a basketballer. And it's like, yeah, he's good at cricket, this guy, right? Doesn't mean it's his favorite sport. And also, I remember talking weirdly another old off spinner, Gareth Batty, one day, and he was asked to play, you know, like a charity game. And he went, play cricket on my day off. Like, he loves cricket bats. You get him in a corner and he will chew your ear off, especially about Ashwin, because he's worked with Ashwin at the Oval, right? He loves cricket. But the idea of doing that on his day off, and then you get those special players, like, you know, I think there was it Julian Wiener, the Australian player who played club cricket until his mid-50s.
I'm sorry, did you say Julian Wiener?
Yeah.
Okay.
You never come across Julian Wiener?
No, but I would love to have dinner with him and Fred Titmus if he's still alive.
Hey. You don't get that many international players who go on to do that. You look at Bumble. Bumble made his comeback last year. He hadn't played cricket in a long time. And, you know, I remember having a conversation with Mark Butcher, who's like, I hope I never have to pick up a bat again. Murali, who you mentioned before, that, you know, there's some bowlers and some batters and some wicketkeepers who'd feel the opposite. It feels like Ashwin is one of them. But for him, I don't think it's just about cricket. I think for him, he has a knowledge base. And so you're kind of feeding your own machine, right? And I said a comment. It's in our chat. You might have seen it. But this is not the end of me in cricket. Is that what he said? Oh,
something
you can't,
like that. He also said, I was one of the last few OGs left in the dressing room.
I like that one. I like that one. I don't know if I like that one quite as much. But yeah, let me see if I can find it. But it was a really good comment when it came through. And I remember, and I thought straight away that the cricket nut in me will never come to an end. That was the comment, right? He's never been shy of being a cricket fan. He's never been shy of trying to find new information. He's never been shy of doing things that are not popular. Like, the easy thing in life is, even if you believe in man cats, it's just not to do man cats, right? Like, I can tell you, in fact, I remember, this is not about the man cat, but about the retired out. I remember having a conversation with Brad Hodge in 2018, where we were sat at the bar in the West Indies, and Hodgie was basically saying, we have to get these guys retired out. And I said, well, you're the coach now. You can do that.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? Right? Like, it's not as if Ashwin invented that concept, but he had the strength of character to follow it through and do it on his own. He didn't need to be tapped on the shoulder. He's like, I'm done.
And he embraced all of that, right? That was him. Yep. And I mean, like I said, one of those blokes who you just cannot hate, and he's given so much to the sport. And I mean, we've been speaking about him for like over 15 minutes, so I think we should cap off the Ashwin tribute over here. So Ash, I don't know if you watch this show or not, probably not, but if you are, go well in retirement and thank you for all the memories.
He certainly won't be watching it today. I hope he's got busier things to do today. He's probably trying to get a flight home.
Yeah, he did say he slated in to leave tomorrow. But anyway, I'm going to take this super chat real quick because it has nothing to do with cricket.
And that is why Australia decided to drop Shane Keith Warne. Cricket is a game of strategy, of picking the right players for the right moment or playing the right shots at the right ball. And HitWicket captures that perfectly. In HitWicket, you're not just picking a team. You're collecting cricket legends, expanding your squad with each new addition. The more players you have, the more options you have to dominate in any situation. And then comes the real challenge, picking your playing 11. Who are your opener, run machine, and Mr. 360? Do you stack your top order with aggressive batters or do you build a solid foundation? And what about your bowling attack? Do you go with pace, spin, a mixture of both? We've got the Tasmanian Devil, Jimmy, and boom, the possibilities are endless. The beauty of HitWicket is that you need to adapt your lineup to your opponent. They can be powerful, balanced, and technical. Each class has an edge over another. It's a tactical dance where you need to anticipate your opponent's moves and exploit their weaknesses. So if you think you've got the strategic mind to build a championship team, download HitWicket and prove it.
Soham Bhattacharya is saying, Bahram, need an overthrows review of your wedding after it's done. Is your footmarks good enough for the Sangeet? These are questions that we need answers to. Well, I mean, I'll be a married man in a week, Soham, and you'll be seeing me more during like non-live shows, but I'll be back on a live show after the Boxing Day test matches. But yeah, we'll talk about it. Give us more super chats and I'll give you the whole lowdown. I wonder...
How has planning a wedding gone? It's an immense thing, isn't it?
I haven't much. And I feel
I actually think that planning a wedding is harder than having a child. Not obviously the physical stuff and the worry stuff, but there is a certain point at which the child is just going to come out. Do you know what I mean? You're eventually just going to have to, you know, even for the mother, and that, obviously it's very different to them because their body is changing and they're going to have to go through a pretty scary day at the end.
Yeah.
But there is an element of that's just going to come out. Whereas that's not how weddings work, right? Like, you know, it doesn't quite work in that same way of where there is that kind of thing. And it's like, then you've got family constraints, you've got venue constraints, you've got cash restraint, not with you guys, obviously, but with normal people. So all the way through, it's just constant conversations.
The birth thing would be better answered by Miriam. I think she can speak to that better as opposed to us. And as far as planning goes, I mean, Aliza, my partner.
Yeah, but you're not planning. How many people are coming to your wedding?
A lot. I mean, you were invited.
Over 200?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not coming.
Yeah. But right? I do expect a gift at some point.
No, you're not getting a gift. You're not bringing 200 people, right, to the birth of your child. Yeah. You are planning an event, right? There are people who do that for a living.
Yeah.
The actual worry and nonsense about having a child and, you know, am I going to know what I'm going to do and how am I going to hold it and how do you wipe a baby's ass and, you know, what happens if this happens and this happens? All that panic is real, but it's contained and there are medical professionals around you at the end that can help with that.
Fair.
Right? With a wedding, it's just nonsense. Yeah. And you just hope that everyone turns up in the right place at the right time.
And this is a brown wedding, a desi wedding with multiple events.
Way worse than a normal wedding.
Dude, all I had to deal with was my clothes and some logistics like hotels for people and stuff. And I was worked up. But then I'm also like constantly creating cricket content. You'd have to talk to Aliza, my partner. She's lost it. At this point, she is overworked to the core. Yeah. And she is a planner. So, I mean, I hope that this ends quickly for her and she can relax. But anyway, enough on my wedding. We had a test match go down at the Gabba, which unfortunately was drawn largely due to incessant rain in Brisbane, which was a bit of a bummer, right? And the series is still level at 1-1, Jared. Before we get into performances, let's talk about, you know, what this means for India now. They, as per my math, they need to now win both test matches to qualify for the World Test Championship final. Is that right? I think so. I'm pretty sure that's the case.
I haven't looked it up, actually. Yeah, I mean, you know, the test match finished. Ashwin retired. I had like a 45-minute nap after being up all night. Yeah. So I hadn't looked at that. That's interesting. Okay, well, that makes it even more interesting going ahead. That probably means then whoever wins the next test is in the best possible situation to go into the final. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if they win one and lose one, then we look at the Sri Lanka series for permutations. If they win both, as per my math, they are quite safe. That's what it is.
Oh, well, I think so. I mean,
yeah.
Look, I think we're in a really exciting position. These teams are fairly evenly matched, which I've been saying since the start. I think there was a bunch of Indian fans who thought the Perth test was a bit of a fluke because of what happened in Adelaide. And I was pretty quick to say, like, if I don't think that's the case. you know, there are weaknesses within both of these sides. It's a really interesting, you know, now you've got Hazelwood's injury. You've got perhaps Travis Head's injury. Mohamed Chami, I'm just going to say he's not coming. I'm just going to put that out there and say we're not going to see him. You know, there's weaknesses within both sides and there's strengths within both sides. There's some players are informed, some players are not informed. All these different things are happening. But if you told me that either side won 3-1 from here, I wouldn't be massively surprised.
Yeah, right? No, it's that kind of series. If,
you know, yeah, and so I think that's kind of where we are at the moment. And they are definitely in a position at the moment where if I'm India, I would have taken 1-1 coming into the fourth test 100 times out of 100. So, yeah, I wouldn't have any issues. And the same with Australia. They've got every chance of winning this series as well. So what the Gabba test was, it was a little bit disappointing. It was funny. Did you see Pat Cummins was asked about momentum?
No, I didn't see that. What happened?
It was such a, like, I mean, I hate questions about momentum. And so I couldn't imagine ever asking a player about this, but this poor journalist obviously thought he was onto a good question. And he was like, well, you had the momentum and then, you know, today you lost the momentum. What's that going to mean for the next test? And Pat Cummins is like, I'm not worried about momentum, which is the right answer. And if fans worry about that, players, that's not how players really look at those sorts of things. Each game is individual.
From India's perspective, they've got their work cut out, right? Backs against the wall need to win both test matches and they're going to believe that they can win both those test matches. Look, even if you take the World Test Championship final out of the equation, there's a lot at stake. Australia haven't defeated India in, what, 10 years in the Border Gavaskar Trophy? And then India have a three-peat on the line, right? They could create history over here and really have those bragging rights forever, right? So, yeah. I mean, it's going to be really interesting and we're set up brilliantly for a Boxing Day box office test, really. So, yeah, I'm keen to see where it goes. Now, on the toss, after day one and 13 overs and 28 runs, people made a lot out of it that, oh, Rohit is fucked up over here. But look, you get a lot of purchase with the new ball at the Gabba. It was that kind of a wicket, wasn't it? And then you've got Bumrah in your team as well. So I don't think that was that big a deal. If anything, I think Rohit still batting at six is a bit of a problem.
It was a new ball wicket and they didn't really strike with the new ball. I don't think they were wrong to do what they did at the toss. When was the easy time to bat on this wicket?
When the ball got soft.
Did it matter what day or what innings that was?
Not really.
Do you know what I mean? So the toss didn't play a big part. The whole Nasser Hussain thing, we did a whole video on this on the main channel. The whole Nasser Hussain thing has kind of warped people. This isn't the same wicket that Nasser Hussain was even playing on, right? And Kerry O'Keefe, and I love Kerry, but Kerry was going on and on about stuff about the Gabba. And it's like, mate, that is stuff from like 15 years ago. This wicket is completely different. The averages suggest that bowling on the second day is a lower average than bowling on the first day. It's no longer the idea of you bowl, you might struggle on day one to make runs and then on days two and three, you make loads of them. That is not this Gabba wicket at all.
Yeah.
The problem was that the bowlers didn't quite find the right lengths and the Australian bowlers did. The Australian bowler, if you're really looking at this series so far, it has been a series in which the first test, the Indian seamers worked out the length better than the Australians. And in the next two, the Australian seamers have worked out the lengths better. Right. Yeah. And if India can work it out in Melbourne or it's even in Melbourne, then it's game on for everyone. Right. That is the issue with what happened in the first innings. Rohit at six, I don't mind. Rohit not making runs is the issue, isn't it? I mean, where he bats in the order doesn't matter if he ain't making no runs.
I saw a stat that Bumrah has 21 wickets and Rohit has 19 runs in this test series. So, yeah, I think him not making runs is the biggest
issue. Played an extra test, though.
Yeah. Yeah. That's also true. But I mean, I don't know, man. To me, six seems too low. Right. I don't know. It's just like,
no,
overkill.
I don't mind that at all. I don't mind him batting at five or six. I mean, part of it is the left-handed thing, right? They want to be a little bit more even. They probably don't need two left-handers at six and seven. But whether he's at number five or number six doesn't matter. Realistically, it just doesn't matter. He has the skills to bat. I think he kind of has the game to bat anywhere opening four, five, six. I'm not sure number three is his ideal position, although I don't think he'd be a terrible number three.
Yeah.
So realistically, if he opened now, I don't think he would make any more runs. Like, who are you dropping from the opening position?
I'm not making him open. I would have him somewhere. Maybe,
so where would you bat him?
I actually thought number three, right? Ahead of Shubman Gill, and then Kohli can move down to five. But I suppose him getting runs anywhere right now would be a bonus for India. Either way.
Shubman Gill wants to open, is desperate to open, and now you're moving him from 3 to 4. Do you know what I mean? You could put Gill at 6, but how does that make their team better? Like, explain to me how you think that makes their team better. Because to me, it doesn't make any difference at all.
Yeah, I mean, if he is having trouble batting at 6, then when the ball is new and hard, it would...
He was having trouble opening though, mate.
Yeah. I mean, what, in the last 13 innings, his average is 12? Something like that?
Yeah. So he opened for half of them and didn't make any runs. He's batted at 6 for a couple and hasn't made any runs. Like,
yeah.
I think what happens is sometimes in cricket, we kind of think that the batting number is the magic fix. Hmm. We've already seen with Steve Smith, that is not the case.
Yeah.
Right? The batting number isn't the thing that fixes you. There are certain situations in which you're batting well and you would bat better in another situation. When you're just batting shit, right, like batting at 6 or opening or first drop, I don't think it's going to make any difference to this team.
Fair enough. All right, I'm going to kind of switch the conversation to Australia for a bit and talk about some performers. Let's talk about Smudger, right? Finally, like after a year and a half, he scored a test 100. And it was an innings of two halves, really, because in the first half, it looked like I was trying to bat like Steve Smith out there, right, basically? Or you were. And then he finally kind of figured it out. And it was all of those fours through the covers versus Jadeja that really, I feel, got him going. But that's a monkey off of his back, 101 in this innings. Is he back, though? Because I'm not entirely convinced. It's a bit like Marnus. I'm not convinced over there either.
Yeah, I think the first part of the innings was really interesting, as you said. It was, yeah, as a writer, there are some days when you sit down and it's hard to write and you almost imitate yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So instead of just writing, you would know, you do this as a host sometimes as well. Sometimes you're just like, okay, this is what I would normally do, so I'll try and do this. And it doesn't quite work because it's not genuine.
Yeah.
Right? But in order, by copying yourself, you get back into your old habit. And that's kind of what that innings was. It looked like someone who was a Steve Smith impersonator trying to be as accurate on Steve Smith as they could and getting it a bit wrong.
Yeah.
And then two things happened. He got set and the ball got soft.
Yes.
Right.
And I mean, it was like proper, it was a battle for survival for a long time. And at some moments I was like, how is he still out there? Right.
Exactly. But once he was in, he did look like Steve Smith.
Yep.
Now, is that just because it got so easy to bat? We don't know, because it was basically the only time in the whole test match we saw the ball get that soft and old, right? So we don't know if how easy it was to bat, because we can't compare it to any other innings.
Yeah.
But I think by the end he looked like himself. He's the sort of person who, I think if you go back through everything he's ever talked about batting, he's kind of always searching for that flow state, right? That's not how he describes it. But if you read between the lines, that's kind of what he's trying to find my hands. I'm trying to find my feet. I'm trying to, you know, and he's basically trying to get to a point where I think it's just he's batting and all he's doing is making little tweaks based on each different bowler or everything else. And I think if you watch what he was doing at the start of the innings, he was clearly not doing that.
Yeah.
And he was exaggerating his movements to try and get into a zone. So he is moving better, but I thought Virat Kohli moved better in that innings at Perth, right?
Yeah.
And Virat Kohli hasn't made runs since. So it could just be conditions based and he had Travis Head helping him at the other end and they got on top of India and that was the case. I would have felt much more comfortable if he hadn't gone out straight after the new ball.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big one,
that
right?
That would be the change for me.
Because that top four is super flaky and he will have to face the new ball quite frequently, even in the remainder of the series. Yeah. But Australia will...
And also, it was just harder.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I would have felt more comfortable if he was better when it was harder.
Australia will hope, though, that he is able to carry this form. And you mentioned Virat Kohli, so might as well take this super chat by GM Vladimir Kramnik. Okay, so he says Virat Kohli's average is 26 in the last 5 years, excluding his 300s, which he, and this one, he scored coming into bat at 200 for 2. And his average is 8 in the first innings in the last 10 tests. Enough is enough. He is struggling to score even 10 runs, let alone hundreds. All right, I think you're jumping the gun a bit and you've got to kind of respect Kohli a bit over here because he's got a lot of runs behind him. Yes, he's been out of form. And you can even criticize the dismissal. You know, same 6th, 7th stump line and he's out fishing. And, you know, he could have kind of played with it himself till the ball got soft. I think all of those things are fair, but you can't just kick the man out either.
I think they have to make a decision at a certain point, though, don't they?
It's the Virat Kohli tax which is keeping him in the team. But you get that sort of tax when you are a batter of Smith, Kohli, Williamson, Root's caliber.
Yeah, so the numbers he put up there, not all older greats have those numbers when they say
those numbers
again. A lot of older players when they drop off, they do go through that kind of stage. But the reason that happens is if he was an average player, he would have already been dropped.
And he just scored a done, mate.
Yeah. So if you're Adam Voges, you can average 67 and be dropped because you're just Adam Voges, right? Or whatever Adam Voges' batting average ended up, right? But if you're Virat Kohli, the team knows that the likelihood of replacing you with a player of that level of talent is very unlikely, right? Shubman Gill is 25. Yeah, he's not averaging 40 yet in Test cricket.
Yep.
Prithvi Shaw is one of the best young talents I've ever seen, and he just got dropped by his first class team, right? Karan Nair made a 100.
Yes.
And basically never played again. This idea that there's just a young player out there who's going to come in and be Virat Kohli is as unrealistic as expecting Virat Kohli to go back to being Virat Kohli. Like point, I think we've seen a long enough period to go, he is never going to get back to the peaks that he had before.
And him but and Rohit,
the question is, can he...
Yeah. No, no. Finish your thought.
No, the question is, can he get back to a point where he averages mid-40s and he's still a really good contributor and he brings a lot of other things to this side? The bigger issue is that Shubman Gill is just becoming the player that they're hoping he's going to become.
Yeah.
Rohit Sharma has lost form at the exact same time. So now you've got two of them in that lineup. And Rishabh Pant is absolutely, has done very well since he's come back. But right at the moment, he's getting commonsed, right?
Yes,
which is
basically
fine. It's happened to Joe Root. It can happen to Rishabh Pant. No one's got a problem with that. But then Jaiswal hasn't made runs since that one really good inning. So you almost have KRL and Nitesh Reddy, right? And now you can throw Jadeja in there.
You can throw Jadeja in there.
You kind of have, you kind of have these guys a little bit in that kind of form.
Yeah. Also, you have to consider the fact that Kohli is 36, Rohit is 37. Your reflexes are impacted as you grow old. There's a natural regression and you got to cut them a bit of slack as well. And I agree that the 100 came in a situation where India weren't under pressure, right? But still, it's 100 nonetheless. And I mean, I would reserve my thoughts till this series is over and then probably we can go into a deeper analysis. But since we're talking about India's batting...
What if he double fails in Melbourne?
Oh man, I'd still play him at the SCG. I would still play him at the SCG, yeah. But I mean, that's a subjective
thing. What if him and Rohit double fail?
Oh man, you're really putting me on the spot. Well, I'm not going to play Jurel and Iswaran over Kohli and Rohit. I don't know, man. I mean, might as well.
And I think that's part of the point. I think Juve Jurel's a really good cricketer and I rate him very highly. He's not going to be a future Kohli, but is he more likely to make runs right now than Kohli is?
Right? Probably,
he's an experienced
cricketer. Yeah.
It's not like, you know, I did a Cricket 8 chat earlier and there was lots of talk about, you know, Bo Webster should come in for Mitch Marsh and all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, so then you're going to have two players in McSweeney and Bo Webster who are in their first series together at either end of the order. And Bo Webster is not a better bat than Mitchell Marsh, right?
Yeah.
Like he's just not. If you look at, the, you know, no, Bo Webster doesn't think he's a better bat than Mitchell Marsh, right?
Yeah.
But the issue there is you're bringing in another player without proper international experience and putting him in the lineup. If you bring in Juve Jurel or Devdutt Padikkal or whoever.
Iswaran, Sarfaraz.
Yeah, yeah. Any of those. You are, you know, some of those have international experience and are aware of it and can be put in. So India's in a slightly better situation, but you know, Juve Jurel is not at that level. He doesn't have the experience or anything else to replicate what Kohli does. But if we're assuming that Kohli's just going to keep failing or Rohit's going to keep failing, at a certain point, using another batting option is not, you know, the worst situation for India.
Yeah. And I mean, their batting has let them down. Take that 400 plus score out. And this was the first time India scored 200 plus in the first innings in this Border Gavaskar Trophy. Those dismissals, some of them were quite disappointing. I'm not going to say that Pant and Rohit were too poor because they got really good nuts over there, right? But you know, Jaiswal, second ball of the game, you've already kind of talked shit to Mitch Stark, which I like. I'll maintain that I still like that banter, that it's coming too slow. But I mean, Stark has gotten the better of Jaiswal with the new ball twice now, with the pink ball, first ball of the game, and now quickly, or second ball in this Gabba test. And I mean, he's got an isolated score, which was great, like 161, but he needs to kind of pick up or pull up his socks. Gill and Kohli out fishing, 6-7 stump line, not ideal. If anything, put some respect on my man KL Rahul's name, right? 84 runs, batting at the top of the order when it's most difficult. And sure, he was dropped on 33 by Steve Smith on day or the first ball of day four, which I also believe like is one of the reasons why this game was drawn, because had they got him there, you never know, anything could have happened. I mean, Rohit dropped head as well, but this was the costly drop. But yeah, KL is India's highest scorer in the series, and we looked up the data and he's been their best overseas batter in Test cricket for the last couple of years. So I mean, it's crazy, right? The guy who gets slandered left, right and center and is the problem is now the solution.
Yeah, I don't know where all the people who were slagging him off have disappeared to.
Yeah.
They'll wait. The minute he fails, they'll all come back. Don't worry about that. Look, he's a really good international player.
Hmm.
He's really useful. He's obviously talented. He should have made more runs at test level. Hmm. I think he would think that as well.
Yep.
But there was a long period of time where Usman Khawaja had made a lot of runs at
also,
test level.
Also, never a stable batting position, man. He's always kind of plugging holes. So that doesn't help. It's like the Moeen Ali thing.
Yeah, and I don't think he's ever been an automatic selection, so he's never felt all that comfortable. But, you know, if you go and you have a look at Usman Khawaja, what, at the end of 2019, Usman Khawaja had had three good years in Test cricket and probably four bad years, right? Mm. But the bad years were really quite bad.
Yep.
And then he strings on two great years in an era when no one's making any runs.
Mm.
Sometimes those level of players, they just work it out a little bit later. They mature at a different rate and everything else. But he's so useful to the Indian side because of his ability to make runs away from India. The annoying thing for him is he can't make any runs in India anymore. And that's where he used to make all of his runs, which I can't even explain that. But look, he's been brilliant in this series. And I know he was dropped, and so people will focus on that. Mm. But I think he was actually the best player against the new ball in this test, regardless of the drop. Like, even if he'd gone out for 30-odd or whatever it was, I probably would have been still sitting there going, actually, he faced the most difficult conditions better than anyone else. And no one would have cared.
Yeah, I mean, look, he scored 84 and he's looked like the most comfortable Indian batter in this entire series. And of course, Jadeja came in this test match and scored 77. But look at the difference in conditions. Like, Jadeja didn't have to face the new ball like that. So that 77 is not equal to KL's 84, even if those two scores are separated by 7 runs. There's a big difference over there.
It's also worth remembering. So someone was saying to me online the other day, like, Jadeja should be in the side just for batting. Look at his batting average compared to everyone else. And I was like, well, have the other guys batted in the top five regularly? Mm. When Jadeja batted in the top five, was that in England, I want to say? When they were batting him in the top five, my memory, and I could be wrong, is he didn't make any runs, that he struggled in that position. I'm just trying to see.
He's probably locked down his place in the side, though, even though his bowling wasn't impressive.
I'm not having a go at Jadeja. What I'm saying is we need to know what he is. When he's batted in the number five position and the number four position combined, he's made 100 with no 50s, but he's averaged about, 26, 27? At in those positions, right? He struggled when he's gone up.
Hmm.
Everyone struggles when they're up the order. There's a reason why positions number five and number seven are having like incredible runs at the moment in Test cricket, and it's because it's a fuckload easier batting in those positions than it is in the top three, and even number four is starting to, you know, number four is going in too early. So having Jadeja is such an incredible strengths to have, and they also have the flexibility of using Washington or Ashwin or any other bowler as well. Like, they're in a really good position from
they
that.
They had that flexibility. Ashwin's gone.
Well, they still have Kuldeep,
and
Akshar. True. Do you know what I mean? They still have the flexibility. So, I thought Jadeja did very well, but when you look at the raw numbers and everyone's like, look at how much he's averaging. We just saw a test match where both of us know that those two players both played really good innings.
Hmm.
We know which one is rated a lot higher than the other one.
Absolutely. There's no comparison. And good on Jadeja for getting runs. He's probably locked down, his place in the side, even though the bowling was quite dog shit, if I'm being real. But you never know. That might change. He's still a very, very high caliber cricketer. But it was really like that partnership between Akash, Deep and Bumrah at the end that helped avoid the follow-on. And essentially, they drew the game right there and then. And here's my question to you. Hazelwood was out injured. Unfortunately, he'll take no further part in this Border Gavaskar trophy, right? And had India not avoided the follow-on and we would have gotten a full day of cricket on day five, there was a risk of running Mitch Stark and Pat Cummins to the ground. There was a further injury risk. So, you know, yes, losing Hazelwood is a big blow, but now you're looking at a situation where you could have lost Stark or Cummins as well. So is that a blessing in disguise for Australia? Even though I feel like India got away with this one. Like, the rain has definitely helped them.
Oh, I don't know. I think if I'm Australia, they were ahead in that game so much that they probably think we had a chance of winning that game and the rain stopped us from having a chance. I mean, they gave India a chance as well because of the collapse, but also that, you know, they were always going to play a short innings anyway.
Exactly. Right? And they were going to try and hit out, right? They weren't going to defend much.
Well, they apparently their plan, which is really bizarre, was they were going to bat normally and then they heard the weather had been updated and they were going to slog it. I was like, you were never going to have time. You always had to play like that.
That's stupid.
I don't think Stark or Cummins is the injury concern in that situation. It would have been Mitchell Marsh that would have been the injury concern. Because he, you know, Cummins said he would have bowled and he would have had to have bowled 10 overs probably for them to have a realistic chance of winning. And 10 overs of Mitchell Marsh is about 7 knee reconstructions, a plastic hip, sciatica, maybe conjunctivitis. Like, I mean, the man is going to get injured if you put him through that kind of workload.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think any other bison in the world has to go through that much. But anyway, good show by Akashdeep and Bumrah, because that was an exciting phase in the game. And it kind of gave us shades of that Vihari-Ashwin partnership, right? In which they kind of stuck it out. Different kind of partnership, but still, it bailed India out. And I think it was phenomenal. But anyway, before we go on break, just quickly, should Australia have declared sooner if they wanted to kind of force a win? Because there are two different ways to think about this. One is you force a win and push for it. And the other is that you tire the opposition bowlers out and you overwork Bumrah.
When would they have had to declare?
I don't know, when they lost Mitch Stark, right?
Oh, so you're thinking day three.
Yes, when Stark was hitting out and he connected a few. As soon as you lost him, you could have declared, I feel.
How much longer did they bat after that?
Lion faced, 30-odd deliveries, didn't he?
So it's not, you're not really giving yourself that much extra time. So I think the time to declare was the night before when Head went out.
Interesting.
When they were, 320 for six? That's when I think England would have declared.
Yeah.
But that's an early declaration on day two of a test match when you've still got an in-form Alex Carey at the crease. And they were scoring quite quickly. Like, Alex Carey scores 70 off 88 balls. Cummins scored 20 off 33. Stark scored 18 off 30. It's probably, by the time you're talking about the Nathan Lyon one, you're only saving yourself, about 10 overs in the game, 12 overs in the
Give
game?
Give a dick, yeah.
That wouldn't have won them this game. And, you know, I don't think it was, you know, but also they wouldn't have been thinking, oh, there's only going to be a day and a half or 2 days of play from then on in. And you shouldn't be thinking that. You should be thinking, we're ahead. Let's try and get as many runs as we can and then roll India and see where we are then. Fair enough. There's a lot of hindsight play with that. But if you're going to make the declaration, I think you go way earlier. You basically say, we think this wicket's actually tricky and we've stolen an extra 150 runs here. We're going to declare at 327. India go on to make 260. But remember, that would have meant that India were batting in the evening. So they would have had to bat in the evening, then bat the start of the next day. And then they would have been on and off for rain. Right, as well. They would have actually had multiple bites of the cherry, but India end up making not that much less than 320. So I just don't think there was a, you know, maybe 320, maybe 360, one of those things you could have declared at. I'm not sure that would have, in the end, I'm not even sure that would have helped.
Yeah, also
because
bad
Australia
light.
Then would have had to,
yeah.
Because Australia would then have had to have gone out in the second innings and batted really well. So they would have had to have a solid start at the beginning where they couldn't score that quickly. Then they would have had to hammer the ball everywhere and hope they didn't lose any wickets. There's a lot of risk in that when they were massively in front in the game.
Yeah.
Also, and they would have been thinking, we will have enough time. And they were wrong.
Yeah. And weather played a part, of course. And everyone knew the forecast. Plus, bad light played a role as well yesterday where Akashdeep just slammed Cummins for six and then said the light wasn't good enough, which was, theatrical. And I love it. But anyway,
didn't say the light wasn't good enough, though, did he?
Did he not?
Batters don't have a choice anymore.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. But anyway,
it's completely taken away. I was actually thinking yesterday was one of those examples of, like, I reckon both teams want to be out there. right? Because they're both thinking, yeah, India's starting to think, oh, wait a minute, you know? And also, Australia's like, we want to be out on the field as much as possible. But unfortunately, that's not how cricket works anymore. Once the umpires make a decision, it's final.
Yep, that's what the light meter says. But anyway, we have more people to talk about, of course, more performers. But we'll be going on a short break. You're watching Overthrows with Jared and Behram. Go nowhere. We'll be back shortly.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year. And I loved every part of it, except for one. This little evil pin here. Because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies. But even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, or one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, or one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally.
Welcome back to Overthrows. You guys are with Jared and Behram. And let's talk a bit about Australia's batting. We touched on Smith, so we don't need to go there anymore. Of course, Uzi is struggling for form, and as is McSweeney, who is literally getting a baptism by fire, in the words of Bharat Sundaresan, with squaring up against Bumrah, right? And red-hot Bumrah. But then again, Marnus isn't particularly looking convincing, barring that 164, or well, not 164, that one knock of 64. but then again, there's some people who are in top form. Travis Head cannot put a foot wrong right now, Jared. 152 of 160 deliveries, absolutely dominated. There's this notion that India aren't bowling short balls, or not bowling enough short balls to him, and he was uppercutting them for six, so I don't know what that's about. But yeah, back-to-back tons in these tests, and also back-to-back player of the match awards. Loves playing against India, right?
Yeah, I said in a video the other day that it's quite interesting that the more they bowl to him, the less they seem to understand what to do. And it reminds me of some of the teams who got freaked out by Gilchrist, where they just defend so quickly. Like, he's going to slash balls and give chances, but India don't always have the fielders there to catch them because they've already panicked. And on top of that, like, they keep just putting a deep point out straight away. And it's like, he's too good a one-day player. He's just going to drop the ball on the offside.
Exactly.
And quite often, even with a deep point, he'll still hit a four because he hits the ball so hard.
Yeah, and right? This wasn't even a case
on a different level.
Yeah, Jared, this wasn't even a case of India not going hard at him early on. Like, he was facing Bumrah, which is the most blockbuster matchup in today's cricket. You've got arguably the best all-format batter squaring up versus the best all-format cricketer in contemporary cricket. Bowler, definitely, but I'd go as far as cricketer. So he got out to Bumrah eventually, but he did kind of, you know, do well against him early on. And I mean, I suppose he's due a failure now.
I mean, the way India is bowling at him and the way that he's seeing the ball, I mean, I'm not sure he is. There's obviously the injury concern. There's something going on with his groin.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's nothing serious. He won't play. Yeah, he said he's fine. So we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, there's definitely an option there where, there's definitely a possibility where he's injured. But yeah, India just looks shook by him in the same way that the Australian top order looks shook by Bumrah. You know, it really is a fascinating competition.
Yeah.
Competition. I just want to get back to the McSweeney thing very quickly.
Uh-huh.
Everyone's going on about how McSweeney keeps going out to Bumrah. That's absolutely fine. We all expected that.
Yeah.
Right?
He's not an opener. Did.
My issue is he can't score. He's so slow. It looks like he has no scoring options at all at test level. And he's a slow first-class player. So I think his strike rate in first-class cricket is about 41.
Okay.
He looks like, at the moment, a test player who's going to have a strike rate of about 36. It is so hard to be a test player with a strike rate of 36 unless you are the world. You have to be basically Pujara or Brathwaite or BJ Watling.
Or Azhar Ali.
You have to have the best forward defense. Yeah, Azhar Ali would be another one. Like a repeatable, rock-solid forward defense, you can have a strike rate of 36. You might still not have a great career, but you can do it.
Yeah.
You look at him, And it's like, he doesn't look like he has that level of a forward defense at the moment. And I really worry about how he's going to score. So the Bumrah thing, not worried about at all. That's fine. But I'm very worried about him at the moment of just that. It's just a player who scores so slow in first-class cricket usually gets stuck in test cricket. And if you get stuck against the best bowlers in the world, you're screwed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's like the anti-Travis Head, I suppose, in many ways, because Head is just like an hour or two of Travis Head could completely destroy you. But also, you know, Mitch Marsh isn't scoring runs, had a great catching game, but didn't like score runs or hasn't scored any runs. But you know, Alex Carey's 70 was a bonus, another South Australian. So Australia will take some positives to Melbourne. And I feel like that MCG test might just decide everything. Anyway, we're short on time and we still haven't spoken about Jasprit Bumrah, so I'm just going to get right into it. 6 for 76 in the first innings and 3 for 18 in the third. He now has 21 wickets in the series already. My prediction, Jared, if you remember, was 30 to 35 wickets for the series. So talk now, Kimber, right?
Yeah, you're on. I mean, your biggest issue now is probably injury, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, I mean,
you would be unlucky not to pick 30 up.
Yeah, this is a super chat, by the way, by Rupesh Gupta, who says, what do you think about Bumrah's workload? Should he be rested for the next match? They won't rest him. He'll play every game, but he did bowl 28 overs in that innings. And at one point, like when Australia had batted for 100 overs, Bumrah had bowled like 25 of them, like 1/4 of the entire overs. So I do fear for him, but this is a guy now.
That's about normal though, isn't it?
It still seemed like a lot, especially for a guy who was pulling up in the previous test match.
Yeah, I mean, it's a five-man attack, so you probably want to bowl slightly. But, I mean, Jimmy Anderson, that's what I would expect of Jimmy Anderson to bowl in a five-man attack. I'm not comparing them because they're different kinds of bowlers and everything. But, like, I don't have the answer. So we're three tests in. Sorry, I'm just going to bring this up very quickly. We're three tests in to this. We got the most wickets is Bumrah. And he has bowled 88 overs in three tests.
Yeah.
So he's averaging 30 overs a test. So he's actually bowled fewer overs than Stark, Cummins, and he's bowled 5 more than Siraj.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair enough.
That doesn't seem to me like his workload is massively over the top. Like, no, Australia aren't talking about dropping Cummins or Stark or resting them. Right.
I mean, he's got a week now, right? So he can recover in the week. But I also said that I see Bumrah getting to 200 wickets in this Border Gavaskar Trophy. And now he's at 194 in 43 test matches at 19.52. So all of us nerds who want him to finish with the test bowling average of 120, that's still on. But I suppose the major area of concern over here is that there is still a massive gulf between him and the rest. It's like two different games of cricket going on when every other Indian bowler is bowling and then Bumrah is bowling. I think Shami won't make it. So that's a big hit. And just putting it like, or summing it up, when you take 6 for 76 or any bowler takes 6 for 76, it's not often that the opposition team scores 445 runs, right?
No. You probably wouldn't have seen the scoreboard on the first day of that innings, the proper day. Bumrah had 44 mistakes off his bowling for 4 wickets or whatever his was. Akash had 45 mistakes for 9.
Yeah. He really bowled Akash, well for not much reward, didn't he?
Akash bowled fine. Siraj in the series so far, I don't think Siraj has been particularly lucky. He's got 13 wickets at 24 as well. He's basically got the same figures as Pat Cummins.
And I mean, he's got this heel arc now where he is the villain and he's loving it. I've coined his name as Stuart Siraj because he's doing his celeb repeals. He's switching bails. He's getting booed by Australian crowds at every single instance. He is Stuart Broad's second coming. Both of those guys are rhythm bowlers who take wickets in clusters. Tell me I am on to something over here.
No. A lot of people have mentioned it. It was mentioned in one of our chats recently. One of our videos, but I think it might have been a Wagga Wheel. You may not have been around. No, all that's true. So right at the moment, I think Siraj looks great and has all series. Like he's been, we're saying how well Cummins is bowling and he has essentially the same figures as Cummins or as Mitchell Stark.
Yeah.
Right. So and also, it's hard to say that Siraj isn't bowling well.
We've got the super chat by Crick Fan who says, why is Siraj not bowling well as he should? Is he not getting enough swing or is it due to his run-up decreasing? He only takes tail-ender wickets.
I think he struggled a little bit to be penetrative with the new ball. But I don't think he is bowling well. he's got, look, with Siraj, all you want is his confidence and his rhythm. And I thought he bowled, it's interesting that question's come up now, because I thought he bowled as well just now as I've seen him bowl. Right? Not as I've seen him bowl. I mean, as I've seen him bowl in this series, right? So I had absolutely no issue with him at all.
He also pulled up, Akash, he seemed to have an injury problem in between where he went off. So I hope he also stays fit.
But
right?
I thought he bowled better in the second innings after pulling up than he did in the first inning. So at the moment, I'm the happiest I have been with the Indian bowling lineup in this series. The boomer or bust thing looks bad because, as you said, someone took 6 wickets in the first innings and the opposition made a lot of runs. I think if you go back, India had plenty of opportunities to take wickets with the other bowlers. It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
Sometimes that is the case. And in the second innings, Siraj and Akash were the main destroyers, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, they took 2 wickets. Boomer ended up with 3 votes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but also Australia were playing a certain way. So you have to throw that into
exactly. But early on, I thought Akash and Siraj looked more likely to take wickets than Boomer for a period of time after the Usman ball.
Would you play both incredible. Of them at the G? Boxing Day Test match?
Yes.
Okay, so you're basically going with the same pace attack for India. Okay, that checks out. Anyway, let's quickly talk about Australia's bowling as well. You've got 3 minutes left before your meeting. Pat Cummins took 4 for 81.
Do we have any more super chats though?
We have one more super chat and I'll save that for, I mean, this shouldn't be taking too long because it's completely off topic. But anyway, Cummins ended up with 4 for 81. It's that nagging length that he continues to bowl, which is catching the outside edge. And then he's using the short ball really well. So that's the hallmark of his performance thus far. And Mitch Stark is still taking new ball wickets. That's where he's most potent. 3 for 83 for him. The question now is, with Hazelwood out for the series, who has been Australia's best test seamer, you know, in the last couple of years, can Scotty Boland give those guys enough support, or are Australia in a pickle?
You'd rather have Hazelwood than Boland. Maybe but Boland took 5 wickets at 21 in the last test. That looked pretty good.
Yeah, but it was a ping ball.
The problem with Boland. Right. Yeah. No, it was. I think the problem for Boland is, if India keep attacking him, will he be able to stay on? And that's a bigger issue if Mitchell Marsh plays and still can't bowl very many overs. And also, Mitchell Marsh has been slogged a couple of times as well. So they both have a sort of similar issue there.
Yeah,
it's a downgrade, but I wouldn't, you know, I don't have any massive issue with that. Plus, I mean, Scott Boland is a fantastic bowler in Melbourne.
Yeah, exactly. If he performs in this upcoming Boxing Day test in Australia win, then I reckon that statue is going to be built, you know. Anyway... let's take the super chat real quick. Vedant Khanzode, I'm sorry if I've butchered your name, but generous super chat, thank you. He says, off topic, but are there any slow medium bowlers like Ian Harvey, Ganguly, Astle, Chris Harris? Is there any future for slow medium pace in the modern game? Now you've just made Jared talk about Benny Howell and he's going to have to push his meeting.
There are, in T20 cricket, there are people like Benny Howell, Rajat Bhatia. What was the guy in the West Indies? Santoki? Krishna Santoki? Is that what was that?
Holy shit, we have more super chats, which I didn't see. Hurry up!
So in T20 cricket, I think we can see bowlers like that. Dan Mousy might actually be a bowler like that, more or less. In Test cricket, teams have gone away from part-time options, that sort of Paul Collingwood, Sourav Ganguly, Jonathan Trott type bowling. And I don't think we'll ever see that again. I don't think we'll ever see it consistently. Teams just want to keep pressure on too much now, and they don't want teams to just amble their way for 10 overs in the way that they used to. So I'm not sure we'll ever see that again.
Fair enough. All right. We've got another one over here by Siddharth. He says, would you rate Rahul's performance slightly higher than Head, considering he's had to face hostile new ball conditions every single innings? That's a really good question.
Probably not, only because Head's innings have completely ended worlds.
Basically,
right?
Yeah.
And KR Rahul has stuck in a little bit. And also, Head has gone on to make bigger scores.
Yeah.
If you're asking me who's batted better, I think that's a different question. And then I might be more interested in your line of thinking. But if you're just talking about impact, I think Head's had a much bigger impact on the series.
Absolutely. Now we've got Sohan Bhattacharya. Once again, he says Bumrah is 6 wickets away from 200 and currently averages 19.5. Yeah, we mentioned that. We'll almost certainly get to 200 at the G. Where would you put him after that stun among all-time greats? I mean, come on, Sohan. We're trying to end a show over here, mate.
Very high.
Yeah, I think that's good enough. And he sent another super chat in which he's just saying the MCG will suit Akash Deep and he should share the new ball. So I think Jared agrees with you.
I think he should bowl with the new ball ahead of Siraj as well. I think the MCG pitch now, weirdly enough, plays a lot like the Gabba. And so Akash bowled well there. I would just, that's why I would roll that bowling line up for again.
So it seems like a bit of a shootout for that Boxing Day test match at the MCG. Who's your pick? Who's winning this, Jared?
I don't know. I haven't really. It's weird because the last test finished. I hadn't actually thought about like who could win the next test. I think it's more likely Australia win in Melbourne and more likely India win in Sydney based on the overall strength of the Australian bowling lineup compared to the overall strength of the Indian batting lineup. I think batting will matter more in Sydney, and I think seam bowling will matter more in Melbourne. Mm. So if I was going to pick who was a slight favourite in each of those tests, I'd have Australia and Melbourne, and Sydney would be India, based on what we know at the moment and injuries and all those sorts of things.
I would ask Bharat Sundaresan, because he first predicted that Marnus is going to get runs. He did. And then he said Smith is going to get runs, and then he did as well. So maybe he's on to something over here. But anyway, you guys let us know in the comment section who's winning the Boxing Day Test match. And of course, that brings an end to this podcast. Just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be a one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team. And yeah, we'll see you soon enough. We've got a bunch of footmarks, quick picks, and live scheduled. Have a good one, guys, and enjoy the rest of the series. You go and have that meeting, Jared, and bye, guys.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.